Good morning, everybody. Good morning. Come on in. Come on in. So good to see everybody. I hope you all are doing well. I am doing great. Today I'm about to get on some airplanes to go out to the Stock Options Summit in Los Angeles, which is this weekend. And I'm super excited for those of you that are coming out to LA. I look forward to meeting you in person. And I want to also let you know that if you're thinking about coming to the door, do not do that. Do not just come to the door without a ticket. We are sold out. We don't have any more passes, no more spaces left. So maybe I think, I'm not sure, that they're going to try to add a little more capacity for those that do want to come, but you'd have to get your ticket online. There won't be any tickets available at the door at all. And the VIP was sold out weeks ago. So I just want to make sure everybody knows that. So give me one second here. All right. So one of the things that I wanted to talk about today is I want to ask you all a question, and I'd like to get a yes or no response on this. Do you feel that Black parents invest for our kids? Like, do you think that we, generally speaking, consider that to be an important part of raising a child? Yes or no? Okay, Sharon says no. I see a lot of no's. Veronica, Diana, Dorina, Kamisha. Okay, Khaleesi. Every time I see Khaleesi, I keep saying Game of Thrones, and that's got to be so annoying for you. And I'm so sorry. I'm gonna try to control and combat my mental illness, which clearly shows I have too much of an appreciation for the show Game of Thrones, like House of the Dragon. Does anybody else watch Game of Thrones? Game of Thrones is the best show ever. If you haven't watched it yet, I envy you because you have the opportunity to go give yourself the thrill of a lifetime. It's a bunch of weird white people. Just be clear, there ain't too many black people in there, and there were some issues in terms of the types of black people they featured in the show. But if you can get past that, it's a great show. And then also they have House of the Dragon, which is all about the dragons, and that's coming out this summer. So if you want to know one of my little guilty pleasures, it's Game of Thrones. There's another show. I thought it was by Jordan Peele because it was very Jordan Peele-ish. It's on Amazon Prime called Them. Has anybody seen that? Them is where they take the history of being black in America and they take Jim Crow and make it into a horror story, which kind of what it is. It's really about trauma. That's really what it's all about. My wife is a therapist. She's a specialist in trauma. And so what we've observed, my wife and I, in a lot of shows and a lot of movies, is a lot of times what you think is a horror movie is really a trauma movie. And it's all about how trauma kind of becomes like a one person horror story for the person that's experiencing the trauma. So they take a lot of the trauma that comes with being black, and but then they add this supernatural element. But really it's just like white people just being terrible. And it's but it's a good show. It's like worth watching. And I thought it was Jordan Peele, but apparently they just stole Jordan Peele's style, because even the title Them, it sounds a lot like Us, right? Of the Jordan Peele movie. But either way though, it's still really good because Jordan Peele's style is good. So if you steal his style, then that means you're making a good movie. And maybe imitation is the best form of flattery, who knows? But anyway, I highly recommend that show too. It's called Them. Now let's get back to instead of talking about them, let's talk about us. So I ask you all, I submit you all this question: do black parents invest for our kids? It just generally, as a cultural norm, do we believe that investing? A lot of you put yes or no in the chat. Do we really sit back and say, "Gosh, if I really love my child, I got to make sure I invest for this kid. I got to make sure that they don't go out in this world without no money." Now I want you to process this, right? Because I'm gonna challenge your thinking a little bit, and hopefully, we can all evolve in terms of how we process the world. So think about it like this, right? If I have a baby, give me a yes or no, or give me a yes if you agree with this statement. If I have a baby, I have to feed my baby. Give me a yes. Again, this is a consciousness exercise. If I have a baby, I gotta feed the baby. If I don't feed the baby, I'm a bad parent. Would you agree with that statement that yes, I have to feed the baby? Okay. All right. So let's go deeper, right? Another question. If I have a baby, give me a yes or no if you agree with this. If I have a baby, I've got to watch the baby. I've got to babysit the baby. I've got to monitor my baby. I've got to make sure my baby is safe. If I live on the 15th floor of a building, I got to make sure the window's closed so the baby doesn't like walk out on the ledge and decide to jump off. Give me a yes if you agree with that statement. Okay. So if so let's keep going. If I have a baby and my baby becomes a teenage girl and the teenage girl goes out on a date and I don't know what this boy's up to, I know this boy could be probably thinking about the same things that a lot of 16-year-old boys are thinking about, 17-year-old boys are thinking about. If my daughter goes on a date with this boy, I should make sure she has some money in her pocket to make sure that she is okay, that she can get home in case the date doesn't go the way she wants it to go. Give me a yes if you agree with that statement. Okay. All right. So if you say yes to all those things, right? If I say yes, I should feed my kids. Yes, I should watch my kids. Yes, I should protect my daughter by giving her money when I send her out into the world. Why would it not be logical to say that I should have some assets for my child when I send them out into the grown-up world? Give me a yes if you agree with that statement. So I really want to understand if you said yes. Now, if you said no, we can talk. Maybe I didn't persuade you, but if you agreed with me, then I think the question to ask yourself would be, what happened? Why do we think that it's perfectly logical to know that if you have a child, you should feed the child. If you have a child, you should monitor the child. If you have a child and you send your child on a date, they should have some money in their pocket just to make sure she can get home okay, or she don't have to sell her body for a Gucci bag. Then why would it not make sense to invest for your kids? Because that's what you're, I mean, you talk about really sending your daughter out into the world. You're really sending her out into the world. Like, let's talk about just the daughter side. And I'm gonna sound like an old school patriarch on this, but when I'm thinking about just the concern that I might have if my daughter's going on a date with a 17-year-old boy, I just realized, wait, when in 2 years when she turns 18, she's gonna be on dates with a lot of 19 and 20-year-old boys. And it's going to be a date that lasts forever because she may be leaving the house and just be out there in these streets. And she's living out there in a world where if I scroll through Instagram, I see a whole lot of girls may or may not be fatherless, who are twerking for money, who are getting flown out by men that have money in their pocket, who are saying, "Hey, girl, just come see me and do what I tell you to do, and I'll make sure that your bills get paid, or maybe I'll pay your car note for a month, but you have to give me an opportunity to give you a disease that's going to stay with you for the rest of your life, right? Or get you pregnant with a baby that's going to be there for the rest of your life, right?" This is what I mean. Think about the types of guys that will fly out the Instagram models, are men that may or may not have, what's the word? Addictions, yeah, addictions, right? People that have addictions, sometimes they also get diseases from those addictions, and so somebody's basically, if your child is vulnerable, if your daughter's vulnerable, this is just me being real with you. I hope it's okay if I'm real. A financially desperate young lady could be in our society tempted to get her half of her rent paid in exchange for somebody injecting their diseased addiction into her body. That's just real. That's just an honest perspective. I don't want to gross anybody out or be too extreme, but I think that you've seen this. I think that you've seen what's happened. And I see someone wrote the term survivor mode. And I think that's a really important term to use, because survivor mode, if you study psychology and you study Maslow's hierarchy of needs, where it shows what happens when you're vibrating on a low frequency, when you're vibrating on survivor mode, you don't really care about the big picture in that moment. In that moment, you're just trying to get an extra $1,000 to pay the rent. You're not thinking about the fact that this person could give you an STD that you have 20 years from today, or a baby that you're taking care of in the year 2045. You're not thinking about that. You're just thinking, I'm going to get $1,000 because I need $1,000. And that's going to get my rent paid and then it's going to take care of me until I need another $1,000, in which case I might do something else. And this is reflected in the culture. This is why we talk about culture when we talk about economics, because I saw a video today. I sit on I go through social media to see what people are doing and what people are thinking. Then I take in financial information. I was watching this. There's this couple, this lady named Ms. KO, MIZZKO. I follow her on Instagram, and she does these really beautiful dances with her husband. And they're like the Black Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers. They're super talented. And I get inspired every time I see them because their dances don't just reflect talent. It reflects lots of love between a Black man and a Black woman. I think that's the most beautiful thing in the world. So they were doing this dance, and they were doing like a duet with another couple where they were dancing, and they were dancing to a Luther Vandross song, and they were all dressed. The men were wearing suits and the women were wearing beautiful dresses, and it was amazing. And I looked at the comments, and somebody wrote, "This is so great to like people are so inspired by the video." And they said, "This is so great. This is thank God it's not another video of somebody twerking," right? Because really what's happened to some extent is that low vibrational culture just tends to permeate. And I was scrolling through, and I'm always, again, because I'm following the culture, I'll scroll by the Shade Room. And on the Shade Room, I saw where three or four big name female rappers like Megan Thee Stallion, which, by the way, a stallion is an uncastrated adult male horse. I don't know what the connection might be. I think that's very strange to refer to a Black woman as an uncastrated adult male horse. But let's put that to the side because I'm going to sound like a mean old man when I make these observations. And there was another rapper, and they were doing a twerking contest. So one of them got on there and started twerking like a stripper, and then the other one was competing with her. So she starts twerking, and then another one starts twerking, and it's interesting because people think men like this type of stuff, and I guess men kind of do, but in a way, it's like smart men were kind of like, "Oh God, can we please stop this? Like, what is going on with our culture? Like, this ain't even fun no more. It used to be fun to get a woman to do something nice and sexy for you, right? You know, like, oh, look at this, I earned this. But now it's like, oh God, everybody." It's like you walk in and you're looking to eat dinner in a fancy restaurant, and all they do is serve you ice cream and cookies, and you're like, "But I'm supposed to eat some steak first and a baked potato and some vegetables, and then we get to dessert. Like, you're giving me dessert when I walk in the door. I'm gonna get fat and get diabetes. This is too much." So here's my point, right? Before I get on this rant about the culture, what I'm saying is that if you're talking about investing for your children and making sure your daughter is financially safe, I want to use the word safe because people in this society who don't have enough money are not safe. They're not secure. Their mental health is significantly affected. There's something that we study extensively in the Black Business School with our team of therapists called financial anxiety. My wife wrote an entire workbook on managing your financial anxiety. It's at drboycebooks.com if you want to go take a look, drboycebooks.com. And so one of the things that I was sitting here trying to think about is what happens when I send my daughter into a financially challenging world where she's not economically safe, where it seems like everybody's twerking for money. Like, what happens with that? How does that end for her? Does that end with happiness and prosperity and success? If it does, then God bless her. I mean, if that's, you know, because some people refer to that as like a liberation and stuff. Okay, I'm not judging that. It's okay for people to think that. But I don't really see that. I don't really see people happy if that's the way their life goes. Like, I've been twerking for money. I followed the Cardi B route, where Cardi used to have to drug men and rob them while they were drugged, because she was so financially desperate. Again, this is all a financial conversation. So she was talking about how she had no money. No money, no money, no money, no money. I keep bringing up the word money so that people will stop thinking that I'm talking about stuff that's out of my lane. I want you to listen to how many songs Cardi B, the stripper rapper who used to drug men to pay the bills, uses the word money. She has a whole song where the whole chorus is money. I want money. I want money. I sell it for money. Money, 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 money. Anybody heard that song where the chorus is literally money, money, money? That's a finance class. What she's doing is, unfortunately, inadvertently, she's giving you a lesson in financial anxiety and how low vibrational behavior can be the result of extreme economic stress. Do you follow what I'm saying? And so to me, a black dad who cares about his girls is gonna stop and say, do I really want my daughter to have to go the Cardi B route through life in order to pay bills when I could prevent all of that by protecting her financially? Do you understand what I'm saying? And then just by the way, I could give a whole conversation about the sons, but since we're talking about the daughters, let's talk about what it looks like to protect our girls. Let's talk about that. So again, I circle back to the original question I asked you from the very beginning. Do black parents feel the need to invest for our children? Do we do that? And if we do not, then why not? Why would that make any logical sense whatsoever? Do we enjoy what we're seeing? Like, do you enjoy scrolling through the internet and Instagram and seeing women twerking for money and considering that to be the way to be successful when you don't feel like the parents are protecting you? So what I want to do is I'm gonna pull up a couple slides here. And for those of you that just came in, I want to say good morning. I didn't mean to start your day by yelling so much. And also, if you're not on the text list, you can get on the text list to get a reminder for Money in the Morning Financial Consciousness Training by texting the word morning to 87948. Text morning to 87948. I'll send you an invitation. Also, tomorrow morning, I actually do have a rapper that's coming in into class as a special guest. His name is D1. D1 is, if you know anything about hip hop, you know D1 because he has been really challenging the industry. He's friends with every artist out here from Kendrick Lamar on across the board. And he's a guy that's really been challenging hip hop culturally in terms of the mass promotion of death culture, but also financially. If you know D1, some of his most popular songs, one was called Sally Maybach, where he rapped about paying off his student loans and it became a massive hit. And he got big endorsement deals from that song. He also had another song called I Hate Money, where he talks about what money does, how money destroys you spiritually if you're not careful. And then he has another song called what was it? Oh gosh. Oh, No Car Note. No Car Note, where he's the only rapper I've ever known who raps about the fact that he did not drive a fancy car. When he started making a lot of money, people thought he would get, you know, the Bentleys and all that. He said, no, I drive a 98 Honda Accord and I'm very proud of that. And so D actually taught a class at Harvard last year. He's teaching at Tufts University now, but he's also making great music. And he's really, really been in social media for challenging the culture and just asking hard questions. He's also the only artist I know anywhere who was had a chance to sign with Lil Wayne's record label and told them no. He told them no, thank you. The one that signed Lil Wayne and Drake and Nicki Minaj and the culture where everybody wants to be part of the culture. D1 had enough what's the word? Financial consciousness to say, this is not the life I want. I don't want to be in the middle of that. Right. So D's going to come into class tomorrow. He's a great friend of mine. And I guess I might kind of call myself a little bit of a mentor of his. I have no idea, but I just know that I love him and I respect him. And so he's going to come in here. So that'll be tomorrow morning. Okay. So let me pull up a couple slides so we can drill into these concepts a little bit further. Okay. So remember yesterday we were talking about the three major pillars of wealth. The three pillars of wealth, the three ways that people get rich in America, it's very easy. It's very straightforward. You can teach your kids this in 10 minutes. It'll change their whole life. Is stock market investing, real estate investing, and entrepreneurship. That's how people get money in America. And I know exactly how they get money with all these three things. Well, I mean, I'm a financial scientist, so that helps. But generally speaking, it's like a big old vacuum cleaner. Like they just suck up all the wealth, and because the money flows to the top. Money's like heat. Money tends to like heat flows to the top. Heat flows upward. Money flows upward, right? So that's why trickle-down economics does not work, because you're assuming that money flows down. Money does not flow down from the rich to the poor. Money flows up from the poor to the rich. Stock market investing. I mentioned to you all that one of the indicators that determined that the economy was doing so great is that the labor supply has increased dramatically. Well, how has the labor supply increased recently? Well, because they just opened the border wide open and they let millions of people into the country. So now they have an increased labor supply. Why is that good for the economy? Well, because now you got more workers, more productivity, everything else. That sounds great, right? But it's not so great for you if you're a worker, because when you have more supply of workers, you can keep prices down, you can keep the wages down, you keep income of workers down, because if a worker doesn't like how much they're getting paid, you get rid of them, you get somebody else. If the workers try to unionize, you get rid of them and you get somebody else. Starbucks is a major union buster. Amazon is a major union buster. Tesla is a super duper union buster. So why do they do that? Well, because if you keep the unions down, you keep corporate profits up. Corporate profits go up, stock market goes up. So if you're an investor in the stock market, you benefit. If you're not an investor in the stock market, you lose, you miss out. The wealth is being literally extracted from you. It kind of sucks, but that's life. I haven't even started talking about consumer spending and how we're trained to spend. We've already discussed this here, so I'm not going to reiterate that part. But that also boosts corporate profits. Two, real estate investing. Well, that's easy. When inflation occurs, there's something called asset inflation, which means that basically, if you own property, the value of your property is going to go up as inflation goes up. So I own a house in Atlanta, and that house value shot up because inflation was high and housing prices were going up. And it wasn't just inflation; also, companies like BlackRock are buying up all the. I think they bought a third of the single family homes in Atlanta. So the supply of housing has gone down. So prices of homes are going up. Well, me and my wife jumped in. We bought the property and we just watched the value go up, making money without working. Very easy to do. So real estate investing is really important. Now, here's what's happening though, is that in many cases, if you rent property out, your tenant is paying the rent for you. So it's crazy that someone else is paying the mortgage for you, but you are actually the beneficiary. That's how real estate investing benefits those who own real estate, and it's hard for those who do not own real estate. Also, as real estate prices get higher, the on-ramp is getting steeper and steeper. It's getting harder and harder for people to go from nothing to something. It's getting harder and harder for young people to go from renting to home ownership. It's very, very hard for them. And it's really hard if they have parents that don't care enough for them to try to have a financial plan for them. So if you got kids, you start investing for them now. That way, when it's time for them to try to buy a house, they're not trying to start with nothing. That whole old school crappy model that our parents had when we were growing up, where you're supposed to start off with nothing and figure it all out. That's not how you're supposed to do it. That would be almost defined as an economic version of child abuse in this day and age, particularly given how expensive things are and how hard it is to get on your feet when you have nothing. So don't leave your kids out there with nothing. You have to invest for your kids. If you don't know how to do that, you can go to blackwealthmasterplan.com. The Black Wealth Master Plan is one of the plans that we have in the Black Business School that is free to anybody. You go to blackwealthmasterplan.com. It's called the $5 a day investing plan, or you can make it a $10 a day or $50 a day or whatever you can afford. But you do that consistently. You don't sell those assets. You let those assets accumulate. Your kids will be rich. Why are they rich? Well, what makes a person rich? What defines a rich person? How do we even know what a rich person is? And people know they can tell who the rich guy is. Well, how do you know he's rich? Tell me, how do you know if somebody's rich? What's the difference? How do you know if a person's rich? Thank you, Barbara. Capital base. More specifically, they just have stuff. Rich people have stuff. They keep more than what they give away. They have a surplus. They have excess. They have stuff, horses and cars and houses and stock and whatever. They just have stuff, right? So basically, when you are investing for that child and you're letting that wealth accumulate, you're making them into a rich person. And then what happens is you don't sell the assets, you just keep them there, and then they can borrow against that for the rest of their life. Well, what wealthy people do is that strategy of buy, borrow, and die. So they buy stuff, they hold it for a long time, they borrow against it, and then they die. And then what happens is the children don't have to pay any taxes on all the wealth that was accumulated during the life of their parents. This was on my brain because I spent 4 hours yesterday with an estate planner planning our family estate, and she was mentioning that the tax basis, if you do everything properly, you can protect and the wealth and you don't have to pay taxes and you can just have that wealth passed on. And we were talking about who gets what and all this other stuff. And so these conversations are extremely important. Okay, so let me keep going. The last piece here, and I know some of you have specific questions about Things like, investing in real estate and what to do and stuff like that. Let's start here. If you want to train your kids on wealth, which I think everybody should do, we have a program called Black Millionaires of Tomorrow. Here's a link where you can get a discount if you want to sign your kids up. And it's not just first of all, your child will have a financial literacy level that exceeds the average college educated adult. That's a guarantee. If you don't believe me, if you don't agree, by the time it's done and they picked up their certificate, then just let us know. We give you your money back. But then number two, when the child is done, it's great for their self-esteem because they get a certification in wealth. So they can get a certification in real estate, a certification in crypto, a certification in stock market investing, et cetera. And what that does is that heightens their self-esteem. It also shapes their identity. A lot of times, think about this. When you look, go back to Instagram and you see the rappers that are in twerking contests on Instagram. Well, a lot of women wouldn't do that. They'd say, "No, I'm not going to do that. I might be a rapper, and I might be a woman, and I might be able to twerk if I want to, but I'm not doing that." Well, why would one woman say that's what I'm going to do, and another woman says, "No, I'm not interested"? Well, it's about your self perception, your identity, right? Megan Thee Stallion is known for twerking, right? She sees herself in that light. That's what she sees in terms of who she is. Nothing wrong with twerking. Twerking's fine. If you want to twerk, twerk all day. Do your thing. But some people don't see themselves in that light, right? And so the question is, how do you want your child to view themselves? If like, for example, I wouldn't go out and rob a liquor store or a bank because I don't see myself as a bank robber. If I saw myself as a bank robber, then maybe I'd be robbing a bank right now. So what happens is that these identities, pay attention now, these self-perceptions are formulated at an early age. When you're a kid, when you're 9 or 10, nobody comes out of the womb as a thug. I want you to think about that. Nobody comes out of the womb, ready to gang bang over bacon and, wanting to get tatted up and get a teardrop tattoo and pull out a gun and shoot somebody. Babies don't think that way. Babies aren't born that way. Thugs are kind of made in America. Just like accountants are made in America. Yeah, so when babies come out, babies don't know who they are. A child is born with no state of mind, blind to the ways of mankind, right? So basically, the child does not know what he is. So it is up to the parents and the mentors around the child to tell the child who they are. Oh no, you're a Muslim. This is what Muslims do. Or no, you a thug. This is what the gangsters do. Right, you are a nun. This is what nuns do. Right, you are Asian. This is how we live in China. You're an engineer. This is how engineers think. Do you understand? Right. So ultimately, the question becomes, what happens? Where, if you just think about the whole thug thing, thugs are made in America. Where does that come from? It comes from media. Maybe it comes from the environment. So somebody tells their kid that this is what a man is supposed to do. So my argument is that you can flip that on its head and use it in a very positive way. If you remember back when America allegedly had the first moon landing, I say allegedly because I still don't understand why we haven't been able to go back to the moon in 50 years. I know people explain it. Somebody from NASA tried to explain it to me. It still didn't make sense. It didn't make sense to me that we have so much that we have 50 years of extra technology and you can't do what you did in 1960. I just it just it's weird. It's weird. I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, but it's tempting, right? It's tempting to say, I'm hearing you, but I have more technology in my iPhone than you had in your whole rocket ship, but you're telling me that you can't go to the moon? Yeah, it's going to take you 10 years? That's strange to me, right? But anyway, so when they allegedly went to the moon, and they put it on TV, millions of little boys wanted to become astronauts. Millions of little boys and little girls too wanted to become scientists and engineers. Why? Well, because the engineers were being held up as the heroes. These are the ones that everybody looked up to. They looked up to Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and the astronauts. That was the gold standard. So the question that we must ask in the Black community is who's being held up to you as to your kids as the heroes? If I point to when I was a little kid, my mother used to point to a guy named Dr. Ben Carson. And it was before he got into politics. And she used to hold him up as an example because Dr. Carson had a mother who was 14 or 15 when she gave birth to him. She could not read. And she went on to get a PhD, I believe. And Dr. Carson went on to become one of the greatest surgeons in the history of the world. I admired him for that. And I found it really fascinating that once he became a Republican, there were black people that would look down on Ben Carson, but they would look up to a rapper like 50 Cent, who is literally only well known because he makes TV shows and can rap. But if you watch 50 Cent's Instagram page, it is the most toxic, immature, idiotic nonsense that you'll ever see in your life. There's nothing about any of that he shares with his 31 million followers that is going to make a black man into a better human being. Nothing, absolutely nothing. There's a lot of things I'm sure he could share, but everything is comedy and ignorance and stupidity and the very habits that will keep you from ever moving forward or ever accomplishing anything. So the question becomes, what are we looking up to and who's being held up as our heroes? When people are being held up as our heroes, are these people that are extremely hardworking, extremely smart, builders, thinkers? Like, is that what we're looking up to with our kids? Or are we being, or is it just, a bunch of rappers? Like, oh, there's some guy who made money, like some guy like Diddy who made money by having sex with people and twerking and being loud and being obnoxious for 30 years, and he made $1 billion. So somehow that's so supposed to be a hero, even though 99.9% of us can never relate to the lifestyle of Diddy, both privately or publicly. But somehow that becomes a hero. That's like, okay, he's a representative of the black community. He's now negotiating politics with the Vote or Die campaign. That should bother you. That's very strange to me. So my point is to say that when we educate the kids on economics, our goal is to say, how do we shape their identity before somebody else does? So if your child gets in and gets a certificate in stock market investing and they become certified in that, and because they've, because again, it's easy for me to put somebody ahead of 90% of the population on stock market investing because that's what I do. I wrote my dissertation on it. Well, then that child then internalizes that and they dive in and they become a very passionate investor. And that to me is going to lead to a better life for that kid than a lot of the other examples that you might see in society. So you got to shape the kids before they get to the point where they decide who they are. There's a really good documentary made by Speech, the guy who was in that group Arrested Development. And Speech was actually in our movie, B1 the movie. And Speech made a documentary called The N-Word Factory. I'm not going to say the word rhymes with Jigga. And he literally explained how culture, false culture, particularly, unfortunately, mass marketed hip hop culture, mass produces millions of young black men who define themselves as N-words. Okay. So anyway, let me keep going here. And by the way, if you just came in, the Stock Options Summit in LA, it is this weekend, but there are no more tickets. You definitely won't have any tickets at the door. I think that all the tickets for the summit have been sold. I know the VIP's been sold out for weeks. So don't just show up to the door and try to buy a pass there. There won't be any passes at the door. If you want to take a look at the website and see if there's anything available on the website, you can, but I think that it's totally sold out actually. But you can feel free to take a look. Now, if you still want to learn stock options and you can't make it to the summit or you missed the chance to bypass, I do have a stock options masterclass here that you can find at stockoptionsmasterclass.com. And so here is a link to the stock options masterclass if you want to take a look at that. And also, if you want to take a look at the training, how to make money without working, that's free. You can text the word money to 87948. If you text money to 87948, I'll send that to you. Also, okay. So let me pull up the slide again, and let's talk a little bit more about investing for our kids, whether we believe it's important, and why we may or may not do it. And then also, I want you to think about this in the context of everything that we just talked about here. In terms of like, okay, I'm sending my daughter or my out into the world. Do I want to give her money in this competitive, scary world, or do I want to leave her out here financially naked and then hope for the best? And so the first two ways people make money in this country are stock market investing and real estate investing. The third way they make money is entrepreneurship. That's just starting businesses. And remember, being an entrepreneur does not mean you have to run a business. Being a business owner is not the same as someone who actually runs the business. You can be a part of a business without actually having to run it. or being involved in it. So like if I had a bunch of money sitting to the side and I wanted to invest in a business, maybe I invest in a way where I find somebody I really trust and they're really passionate about what they're doing and I provide capital to help them do that. Or maybe I can provide some other resource that helps the business succeed. So don't ever think that entrepreneurship or business ownership means everybody needs to quit their job and become an entrepreneur. That's not for everybody. However, if you hate your job and you want to quit your job, I encourage you to spend your time exploring ways to quit your job. If you like your job, then great. You have some degree of consistency, and maybe hopefully, if you live below your means, you have excess cash flow. The excess cash flow can then be used to invest in one of those three major areas. If I had a kid and I want my kid to be financially ready for the world, I absolutely positively make sure that they spend at least 200 hours of time. You can even put it on a chart, like schedule like a chart. The same way you might maybe count the number of football or basketball practices they do or the number of miles that they run. And I would literally have them spend 200 hours at least studying stock market investing, 200 hours at least studying real estate investing, 200 hours at least studying entrepreneurship, how to start businesses, how to run businesses. That skill alone will make a difference in their life that you cannot believe. That skill alone will probably have more impact than 90% of the crap that they learned in public school. There's a whole lot of stuff that's learned in public school that does nothing for your life. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. I was in college and I remember taking a class about Irish peasants because I had to take this class. And I had to study this crap like really, really hard. And I don't know how in the hell a black man in this day and age can benefit by knowing the details of the day-to-day life of 19th century Irish peasants. I don't give a damn about that. And if I did give a damn about that, maybe that's something I learn after I learn how to survive as a black man in the 21st century and beyond. Maybe that should be my first lesson, not how to survive as an Irish peasant in the 19th century. What the hell, man? That's crazy to me. That makes absolutely no sense. I mean, think about this, right? I remember, you know what I know from that class? I might have told y'all this because I think it's so funny. I remember learning that the Irish peasants used to make a drink called Bony Clabber. And with this drink, Bony Clabber, you know what it was? They would take milk and they would put it on the porch when it was really hot and let the milk spoil to the point it curdled. This is how weird Europeans can be. And it 3 days later, so the spoiled milk, they would then put cow's blood in this milk. And somebody just thought it would be nice to drink this nasty crap. Who would drink spoiled milk and cow's blood? That's crazy. But yeah, look it up. It was called Bony Clabber. It was crazy. And I learned a lot of other stuff, but I remember thinking, this is not going to help me succeed in life. Imagine if I took that 100 hours I spent studying about 18th, 19th century Irish peasants and spent that time learning how to start a business, or spent that time learning how to invest, or spent that time learning how to acquire real estate. That would have made a much bigger difference in my life. So education has to be practical. It has to make sense. If it don't make sense, then it don't make sense. I wouldn't start learning anything until I can fully understand why I'm learning this. If you don't know why you're doing something, then don't do it. You got to know the why. The why is more important than the what and the how. The why is the driver. The why is the motivator. The why is what tethers you to the purpose. And a lot of people, you'd be amazed at how many people go through life and don't even know why they're doing anything. They just do stuff because everybody else is doing. They just follow in the crowd. They're living a sheep's life. I mean, think about it. You know, one time I talked to this interesting, actually, she was really smart. So this isn't just dumb people that do this. A lot of really highly intelligent people do this. I talked to this lady, and I knew her in my PhD program, and she was super smart and very pretty, but so weird that I couldn't have dated her or anything because she was like a weirdo robot or something. It was very strange. And I remember asking her, and so we were both about 29 years old, right? And she had gotten married right out of college and got a divorce like a year or two later, right? And so she was a divorced single mom, going to school. And I remember asking her, I said, "So why did you get married right out of college? That's kind of young, isn't it?" And you know what she said? She said, "I don't know. I just thought that was what you're supposed to do after college." And I remember thinking that's a pretty heavy decision to make just because other people are doing it. You didn't think about it. You didn't say, well, should I be doing this? Does this make sense? And really, if you think about it, though, a lot of people do that. Studies show that 70% of all people will follow the crowd, even if the crowd is wrong. And I'm also convinced, my wife sent me a video today about how sometimes people that have high IQs, like a lot of you in here, are super smart. People that are super smart, that are conscious and aware and intelligent, that think for a living, they have a hard time sometimes in the world because we live in a world where so many millions of people are trained not to think. So you see, you're thinking about it, you process it for a while. I hope that you're doing this. I hope you're at least making an effort to use the brain cells that we have, right? So even if your IQ isn't high, if you're operating at capacity, like if you're really just saying, you know, I don't know what to do, but let me just think about it. Let me stare at it for a while. Let me just process it for a little while. That puts you ahead of most people, by the way. A lot of people don't do that. So what the lady said in the video, it was a therapist that, and my wife sent me the video. She said people with either high IQs, and I'm going to expand that to people who just think a lot or who are very conscious. Again, remember, you're here because you're in financial consciousness training. People who are very conscious don't always fit into the world because they start questioning things, or someone will say something that doesn't make any sense, or it's just kind of stupid. And you'll challenge that. You'll say that doesn't make any sense. And then next thing you know, it can cause problems in some of your relationships because you're not trying to just fit in and get along. And I want to just encourage that part of you and just sort of know that I really have concluded that a lot of the battle that you see on social media can sometimes come down to the battle between intelligent people and people that don't value intelligence that much. I'm not going to say that they're all stupid, and I'm not going to say that someone's stupid just because they disagree with you, because that would be a stupid thing to say. But I am going to say that whenever you see something that just doesn't make any sense, or somebody says something that just comes out flat out weird, crazy, or dumb, just sometimes you got to put that in your pocket and just know that the reason that that's happening is because you see a different world than they see. When you are conscious, you see the world differently from people that are not conscious. When you're on a high vibrational frequency, you see the world differently from when you were vibrating on a low frequency. It's like if I'm an ant and I live in a two-dimensional world where all I can see is what's in front of me and what's beside me, but then I'm a bumblebee and I grow into a bumblebee that's flying above the ant. Me and the ant aren't going to have a lot in common sometimes. You know, now if the ant is smart, the ant will listen to me when I tell him, hey, look out, man, over here, you're about to run into some problems if you go in this direction, because I'm operating in three dimensions. I'm above the ant, right? So the ant, if he's smart, he'll listen to the bumblebee because the bumblebee can help him see things, right? The bumblebee has a sight and an awareness and a vision that the ant does not have. But if the ant is an idiot, the ant is gonna argue with the bumblebee. The ant's gonna say, no, that ain't true because somebody told me that over there was gonna be more fried chicken and honey and blah, blah. And you're like, no, there's an ant trap over there. You're going to die. No, you crazy. Stop talking. Right. That's what the internet kind of does. And that's honestly, I'm gonna just be just, I don't even know how this sounds. This probably sounds so terrible for me to say this, but I really suspect that the fact that I've intensely studied finance for the last 35 years gives me like a lot of insight, almost like a fifth dimensional bumblebee. And so what happens is that we live in this world where people like me, I end up feeling guilty because I'm like, gosh, I don't want to seem uppity because I've been accused of being uppity, right? And what, and I don't, I, you know, I'm I, everybody's the same, and I just had opportunities other people didn't have. And then I'll think everybody should be able to see the world or see the same things I see. And that's just not true. Sometimes you have to accept that. And so I had to. So the agreement I made with myself is stop arguing. If you're trying to be, if you're a bumblebee, focus on being a bumblebee. You ain't got to always argue with an ant or an arrogant ant. There's nothing wrong with being an ant. But when you're an ant that thinks you can see the world the same as a bumblebee, and you're going to argue with every bumblebee that tries to give you some good information, then don't argue. Don't argue with the ignorant ant. Don't argue with the arrogant ant. Just let the ant just do what ants do. But then offer the vision and the perspective for those that can appreciate perhaps there's an additional insight that might come from being a college professor for the last 30 years. Maybe I learned a couple of things when I taught finance at the University of Kentucky, Indiana University, Syracuse University, when I taught in China, when I taught, when all the years I've been teaching, maybe I picked up a little knowledge there that you did not pick up with by hanging out on Instagram. I don't know. I don't know, right? Because I don't want to sound uppity, but the point of the matter is that it really, I really think that that's a lot of what happens in the world. I think that consciousness and just awareness. And here's the thing. A lot of the things I understand didn't just come from school. You can learn a lot from school, but school does not really make you wise. It does not give you true knowledge all the time. It doesn't always give you awareness. The biggest things I've learned over time came from just being humble enough to sit back and just think about something for a long time and to say, huh, I don't understand your perspective on this. I got to really think about that for a while. Like for example, I've taught things like stock options for decades, right? Every time I teach it and I start talking about it, I kid you not, every time I bring it up, every time I think about it again, I see something different every single time. And it might literally be something I've known since the 90s, but every time I talk to you guys about it, I'm like, oh, I never saw it like that. Oh, here's another announcement. Bye, mama, love you. And that literally just comes from meditation almost. See, if you're a person that meditates and sits in silence and observes and sits back and thinks about things, or maybe you think before you speak, I want to encourage you to keep doing that because I think that's going to really help your awareness in a lot of areas of life. It's going to help you question and challenge things and look at assumptions and, sort of tear away assumptions and say, why do we assume that everybody has to do this, everybody has to do that? Or just little things like what the lady did say is that smart people are the ones who are likely to go to a college class and say, why am I learning this? This doesn't even make a difference. Or that maybe they don't even go to college and study because they're like, college is expensive and it's a waste of time and why should I do that? And so at the same time though, you have to be a little careful though, because you can spill into that arrogant space and think you know everything. That's just my observation on that. So I would encourage you, be aware, be smart, keep thinking about things, just process, just sit there and just stare at it. I guarantee you that if you just stare at something for a few days, you're gonna learn a lot more than you knew when you first saw it the first time. Okay. So one assumption we got to do, one thing that, and the reason it's important to do that as a Black person is because you're programmed. They program you from birth. You've been getting programmed for hundreds of years. Your programming goes all the way back to slavery. They literally program you like you program a computer. They hack your brain before you're even born. And so this brain hack that we go through has us out here looking blind, deaf, dumb, crazy, and stupid, doing stuff that don't make no damn sense. Like, why in the hell would you, as a Black person who loves your children, send your children into the world without any kind of financial preparation or financial plan? What makes you think that that's normal? I know why you did it, because that's what somebody did to you. Because that's the family tradition. That's what we do. We don't prepare our kids. We just throw them out there and tell them good luck and hope that they figure it out and then watch them suffer. And then wonder why they make bad decisions. Well, I don't think you can do that, especially now when you look at the statistics, right? Millennials and Gen Zers, they can't buy houses, they can't pay bills, they can't, afford hardly anything now because they're starting with nothing. I mean, you're coming out of college and you're getting this crappy ass $45,000 a year job. And no one's taught you about things like family and that working together can actually help you succeed financially. So you're out here by yourself. You living in New York City, making 45, 50,000 a year, and people are talking to you about trying to buy a house and all these other things that are really impossible for you to do. You're stuck. And what do? You do the best thing you know how to do. You go to work every day, but then you're depressed because you got student loans that are this high, your bills are that high, and then on top of that, you're trying to figure out the other aspects of life. That's a terrible, terrible feeling. So I really think there should be like a class on life, like literally just like life, like little, and maybe that's partly what I'm teaching just by talking every day. So you can bring your kids, because I like to talk about life. I like talking about real stuff. I will talk to you about why Cardi B's twerking on Instagram and versus somebody else who's doing something else over here, because this is life. This is real stuff. But young people are trying to figure it out. And I think that the part of the reason they don't figure it out is because they don't talk to people who've had time to think about it. So anyway, let me pull up the slide and also Let me see. One thing I can share with you guys is I want to recommend, if you want to take a look at Dr. Claude Anderson's books, those are in our bookstore. And you guys know I love Dr. Anderson, and I think that he's the absolute OG super goat of finance and investing and wealth and everything else. You cannot talk about black wealth without talking about Powernomics and talking about Dr. Claude Anderson. So if you want to get a copy of his book, and you can get a copy of my book, which is called The 10 Commandments of Black Economic Power, that link that I just shared with you offers a pretty good discount. Also, if you text the word money to 87948, I'll send you the training, How to Make Money Without Working. That's all about selling stock options. I think selling stock options is a great way to make money. All right, so let me pull up this slide again. Okay, so we talked about the three pillars of wealth. Now let's look at this quick thing. Okay, so here's commandment number eight from the book. And it's really simple. Always plant seeds for the future. This is related to your financial vision. Remember, this class is financial consciousness training. Consciousness is awareness. Awareness is increased when you have additional vision. When you see things and you're observing and sort of preparing for what's coming down the pike. When I learned how to fly airplanes, I remember learning little things like, when you're in an airplane and it's you're in the air and you're moving very, very fast. So one thing about being a pilot is that you always have to think about what's coming up. You can't just focus so much on what you're seeing below you that you forget about what's coming up to you. Like, so if you're approaching the airport in an airplane, you have to make your radio calls 10 or 15 miles before you get to the airport to really start preparing. You have to go through documents and look at the alignment of the airport. You have to look at the call signals, make sure you're on the right radio frequency. You have to do all this preparation. And the term that they use is get ahead of the, stay ahead of the airplane, right? Because if you get to the point where you're pulling up on the airport and you're figuring all this out at the last minute, it's a complete mess. It becomes chaos, right? So really, when you're talking about life and investing and wealth, I would say that those of you that want that financial awareness, that financial vision, that financial consciousness, you got to stay ahead of the airplane. You want to operate not in a two-dimensional space. You want to operate in a third, fourth, and fifth dimensional space where you can see what is, what was, what is going to be, what could be, all those things, right? You have to have that level of vision. Stay ahead of the freaking airplane. So this eighth commandment of always planting seeds for the future is one of the most, if not the most important principles that an investor will commit to. Investors are seed planters. Wealth builders are people that look ahead. They stay ahead of the airplane. They're always planting seeds for the future. They're always trading instant gratification for delayed gratification. They're willing to sacrifice something today so they can have more tomorrow. In fact, most of the equations that help us to understand wealth, when I was doing research papers and studying for my doctorate, most of the equations that we use to figure out how wealth works came right out of biology. They came right out of biology. Well, why would they come out of biology? Well, because in biology, they use mathematical models to determine how things grow. They have equations for how fast a tree will grow. They have equations that will tell you how big a sheep will be if a certain amount of time passes, right? They have equations for how a flower will grow and how you can grow more flowers if you plant more seeds. And if the seeds grow at a certain rate, you can have a garden, right? So literally, finance. We took our equations out of biology. So the point that I want to make to you is that those who plant seeds consistently will typically have a harvest. If you consistently plant seeds and you let enough time go by, you're going to have a bigger harvest than someone who plants no seeds. In other words, let me say it in a different way. A person who's always preparing for the future will be in a better position than a person who only thinks about the present or is stuck in the past. So, if you want to know why we must confront culture and trauma when it comes to wealth, it's because people who have bad culture are focused on instant gratification. They're thinking about what they're going to get right now, how to look good now, how to get some sex now, how to go eat a cheeseburger now. They're thinking about now, 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 but they're not thinking about the future. People like that, they destroy their relationships because they're not worried about the effects of their words. They destroy their health because they're not worried about what they eat. They destroy their economics because they want to spend their money on a foreign whip and a Gucci bag and not put money to the side for an investment. That's what people that are living that bad culture do. And that's why they don't have investor vision, because they're only thinking about the here and now. They have no concern for the future. The reason you have to address trauma, undiagnosed, untreated trauma, which is the number one variable, number one problem with when it comes to wealth in the Black community, you have to address trauma, because traumatized people not only lean on instant gratification to numb the pain, but what pain are they numbing? They're numbing pain from the past. Traumatized people can't look at the future. They can't move forward because they are stuck in the past. The stuff that happened to you 12 years ago stays with you. And what does that do? That affects your health, that affects your wealth, that affects your relationships. You eat to the point of obesity because eating releases endorphins that help you numb the pain that might have come from your past, issues you never addressed or dealt with. You spend money because shopping releases endorphins, and shopping addictions are a very real thing. Maybe you destroy relationships because every time something goes wrong, you get triggered. And when you get triggered, then guess what? All hell breaks loose. And next thing you know, you're punching your wife in the face, or you're cussing your husband out, and whatever, because you're really not mad at your husband. You're really mad at your daddy because your daddy abandoned you when you were four, and nobody ever explained to you how horrifically tragic and traumatic it is to lose the person that you trust the most when you're a 4-year-old girl. But you work past that because you're a strong Black woman, right? That's what they tell you. Be strong. You're a strong Black woman. I am amazed. No. I'm sorry. That's trauma. That's not fair. You got to fix that. So traumatized people live in the past. People in bad culture live in the present. People that heal can focus on the future. They can stay ahead of the airplane. Imagine if you're flying an airplane and all you're doing is you're looking below you and behind you. You're gonna crash that damn thing. And you definitely ain't gonna get nowhere important because you won't even know where you're going because you're looking backward. So you gotta fix this stuff. A lot of these wealth conversations really are very spiritual, psychological, and emotional. You fix that. If you show up healthy in those areas, you tend to be better when it comes to making investment decisions, because you can focus on the future, because your present isn't draining you. That cancer from the past isn't draining blood out of your system to the point where you can't. Some people can't even focus on long-term planning because they literally, their whole life, they're living in survival mode. They're struggling. If I'm struggling in survival mode and I'm always in constant pain and I'm still crippled and handicapped from my past, how in the hell am I going to think about what's going to happen 5 or 10 years from now? That's hard to do. So what I'm saying is, you got to heal, man. You have to fix this. And I think that there's something about some parts of us, not all of us, but some of us, where we just kind of think this is just normal, that we're supposed to just operate on this weird, almost like animal frequency sometimes. Like, I get, if I have a disagreement with you as a Black man, I'm supposed to want to fight you and beef with you and spar with you and destroy you. And, just, or in relationships falling apart. I mean, just the fact that relationships don't last that long, that right there is, that's costing trillions of dollars to the Black community. Because I saw with this actress, I think it was Halle Bailey, I think that was her name, the one that had the baby with the rapper. I don't know why the women get fascinated with these like little thug rappers or whatever, but she had a baby with this rapper and it was all over the social media. And then they broke up right after the baby was born. And of course there was some like, oh, he did this and did whatever. And I'm sitting there thinking, God, that makes me, I'm so sad for that child. That child's coming in the world and you're already setting them off at a deficit. You're already bringing the child into the world without a consistent mommy and daddy who are working together to make sure the child is healthy. Like, because we live in this world where we're just somehow convinced that the daddy can be gone 90% of the time and the child's going to be the same. I just, as a person who had his daddy around all the time, I can tell you it ain't the same. If my father was gone to the police academy for 6 weeks when I was 12, just 6 weeks he had to go to the police academy, and it was just me, my sister, and my mama. All hell broke loose in those 6 weeks. Like, just those 6 weeks, it was not the same household. I remember the structure wasn't quite the same. I was able to get away with a whole lot more than I can normally get away with. And the expectations weren't the same because mama was tired. She was busy. But when daddy came home, things were different. You know, there was a different type of vibration in the house. You know, or when my mother had a job one time where she had to work like all night or something, and she was gone a lot, and it was real weird. And in that time, like, the house was a mess. Me and my sister were like jungle children. Like, we were just swinging from ropes from in the house and destroying stuff, and it was hard, you know. So she had to adjust her schedule because of that. Like, this was an era, and again, I don't know if we're ever going to go back to that era, but I would say if you are tempted to do it, I think it's the right thing to do. But this was a time where parents would say, yeah, I wanted to do it that way, but because my kids were suffering, I switched my schedule, or I changed something because I had to make sure that I'm there for my kids. And I don't really see a lot of people thinking that way now. I really don't. And again, maybe that's a personal bias, but that does affect not just family, but it ultimately affects wealth. It affects the long-term trajectory of everybody involved in that situation. So let's go back to that eighth commandment. The eighth commandment is always plant seeds for the future. And seed planting isn't just financial. This should be embraced as a cultural value of any family that wants to be healthy, wealthy, and prepared for the future. So that means seed planting is literally anything that I do that involves delayed gratification that is going to lead me to sacrifice something today that will make my life better in the future. Where are you planting seeds? Because I find it utterly fascinating that there are so many people who expect a harvest but planted absolutely no seeds. They plant no seeds in their life and then act surprised when they don't have a harvest. Does anybody know anybody like that? Like, people that literally are like, I don't understand why I don't got no money. And but they never did anything to actually have money. So did you think Santa Claus and white Jesus were gonna just deliver money to your bank account? Like, what did you think was going to happen? Like, what process were you leaning on that you thought that was going to mysteriously and magically create all this prosperity that you want in your life? Did you think praying for the money was going to get you the money? Like, I would really say that when you see someone that has no harvest, I want you to observe that consciously and ask yourself, well, did they plant any seeds? Where did they plant seeds? And then, so sometimes either people plant no seeds, or they plant the seeds unconsciously or without consciousness, where they're planting seeds in the wrong place. So, for example, you have a lot of people in this country, millions of people, who have worked their butts off every day for 40 years. And if you look at their finances, there's nothing in their bank account that would show you that they've been working their butts off for 40 years. There's no surplus, there's no extra cash, there's no assets, there's no wealth. There's only strugglenomics. And again, this is not to make fun of anybody for this, because I think this is part of the trick of capitalism. But I think you got to ask yourself, how in the hell did you work your butt off for 40 years? You've been planting seeds for 40 years, and somebody's benefiting from that labor. Somebody's benefiting from those seeds. So who benefited, right? So I will say this: if you've been planting seeds at your job, then those seeds have been growing and they've been bearing fruit. They've been bearing fruit to your boss. Your boss has been the beneficiary of that labor. Your corporation's been the beneficiary of that labor. If you've been paying rent consistently every month for 20 or 30 years and you own no assets, well, your landlord owns more assets because you've been paying your rent, because that money has been going to pay the mortgage on property that is owned by somebody else. So ultimately, what I want you to really think about is not just seed planting, but consciously thinking about where you're planting the seeds in a way that's going to bring benefits back to you and the people that you love. Does that make sense? Okay, so as a cultural normal, we'll talk about this more tomorrow. Again, make sure you get on the text list. Text the word morning to 87948, and I'll send you a reminder tomorrow. Actually, let's see, tomorrow. Yeah. We're gonna do tomorrow because D1's coming. Well, D1's coming tomorrow, and then the Friday. I can't do Friday because we're doing the stock options summit. So that's a day that I won't be able to make it. But anyway, but remember when you're planting seeds. You have to, number one, have a commitment to planting seeds, but then number two, consciousness is required so you know where to plant seeds in a way that's going to benefit you, not just in the way that they tell you. Because they'll tell you, they'll have you out here busting your butt, working hard every day, being consistently dedicated to something that ultimately ends up benefiting somebody else. And you have to be really thoughtful about that. Okay. All right. So before we go, let me share a couple links. Number one, if you have any questions or any issues with anything going on with the Black Business School, any memberships you have, feel free to just email support at theblackbusinessschool.com. That's support at theblackbusinessschool.com. They can take good care of you. There's a great support team waiting to talk to you. Also, I do have this training called How to Turn Your Child into a Millionaire. It's yours for life. I think the fee is like $99. And it's a course broken into pieces, digestible chunks that will give you a clear step-by-step process to turning your child into either a millionaire or very, very close, making sure that they are in strong, that your child's in a strong economic position. It's very easy to do. It's a very simple model that we put together in the Black Business School. The link is right there. I think someone's asking, will you be at Mr. Boyd's event this Sunday in Mobile, Alabama? No, I will not be able to make it. Mr. Boyd is the father of Infinity Song, which is the kind of the new Jackson 5. I'm very proud of them, by the way, because now they are super world famous and they're really, really big in Europe. Like they're selling out venues in London and in all parts of Europe. And their daughter, Victory, it sings like an angel. She sings so well that she sang for Jay-Z and he signed her on the spot. Like that's how good she is. So Victory's been famous for a while. Now all the siblings are famous. And I really think that so they're like such a breath of fresh air. They've appeared at our All Black National Convention many, many times. And everybody loves them. So I encourage you to look them up. Look up Infinity Song, and it'll just make you feel good because this is family. I mean, they do everything we talk about here. This is why John and I are such good friends. We're really, really buddies. Like I'm actually planning to possibly go to Europe with the family, and I don't know. We'll find some way to coordinate. I could make Mobile, Alabama, but I love them, love them, love them so much. And the family is beautiful because this family that's called an Infinity Song. Look it up, Infinity Song. The family's beautiful because it's the culture that John and his wife created that developed the infrastructure that allows these children to conquer the world as a group, as a collective. And they have strong values. Victory got invited to sing at the opener for the NFL, in the NFL season opener. It was millions of people, national TV, very big deal. Not quite the Super Bowl. But pretty big because it's the season opener, national television. And she didn't want to get the shot. You know, again, that was her decision. That was the family's decision. And they said, well, you know, you need to get this shot to come and sing. And she's like, I don't want to get the shot. Can I take a test? They were like, no. She said, can I wear a mask? They said, no. She said, can I socially distance? They said, no. So she said, I'm sorry, but I can't do it. Right. So this was beautiful to me because it's really nice to see people that understand that there are so many things in the world that are more valuable than money. There's so many things in the world that are more valuable than just being famous and getting likes on Instagram and everything else. And you don't have that in this world. You have people that sell their entire soul and tell you that this is Black excellence, this is Black success. That's not Black excellence. That might be called Black debauchery in some cases, where you made money and you think that making money just nullifies every horrible thing you did in order for you to become famous or successful. And I think that that's wrong, right? So Infinity Song represents the very best of us. The family, again, I compare them to the Jackson 5 because they're just as talented and they're so great to watch. And now they're getting the credit they deserve. And I love it when the good guys win. You know, like I have a lot of friends in entertainment that I've been working with and supporting for years who had breakout years this year. First would be Infinity Song. Like now they're just blowing up all over you. I talked to Johnny, he said that it's just out of control now. And you guys know them. If you've been coming to the All Black National Convention, you know this family because they've been there twice. Or maybe three times. I can't remember. They sang at our wedding too, for when me and my wife got married. There's D1. D1 really, really blew up this year and was it was literally the most talked about rapper on earth for a little while. And I've been D1's friend for many years. He's come to about four or five different conventions and performed there. Killer Mike won three Grammys this year, and he's been my friend probably since about 2013. He performed at the very first All Black National Convention. He didn't perform; he was a speaker there. And I appreciated that. He and David Banner came to the convention in 2014 or 15. I guess 15 was the first year. And so anyway, we're getting it done. Like, we're seeing people that are coming out of the culture of intelligent Black people who are now taking their rightful place on the throne as leaders in the entertainment space. And I think this is just the beginning. So I'm really excited to see this. And I'll keep you guys posted in case I see anything new. And if you want to come to the next convention, it's going to be in Chicago, Lombard, Illinois, to be exact, which is a suburb of Chicago. You can go to allblacknationalconvention.com. It's a great place to get together and meet each other and be around intelligent Black people who really want to do the right thing and make the world a better place. So just go to allblacknationalconvention.com. That's what we do. All right. So have a good day, everybody. I went longer than I expected. But hey, I was having fun today. So I hope this discussion was beneficial to you. Make sure you get on the text list. You can text the word morning to 87948, and I'll send you a reminder. But also, once you register for the Zoom will also email you reminders too. So just check your email. And we do this every morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. God bless you. Love you. I'll see you guys later. Take care. Bye-bye.